welcome to Behind the Bench with Todd Flood. During the show, we'll talk about the big legal cases in the news, both locally and around the country. Todd will also speak with judges, attorneys, and other special guests about our current legal system and how to navigate it. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. It's been a while, but I'm excited to be here. I have in the studio with me none other than Michael Weaver from Plunkett Cooney. We're going to have some amazing guests on today. We got David Layton coming to us from Flint. He's the Genesee County Prosecutor. We also have a special guest. You want to talk about the Lions. We're going to have the son of one of the best cornerbacks in NFL history that played with the Lions. You're going to hear him speak. And then we are going to touch base with Rose Bronstein, who lost her son in a tragic suicide out in Chicago, and about that case. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Behind the Bench with Todd Flood, exploring the big legal cases in the news, both locally and around the country. Todd will also speak with judges, attorneys, and other special guests about our current legal system and how to navigate it. Now, once again, here's Todd Flood.
Well, I got to tell you, someone that's one of the best lawyers, I think, in our area, Mike Weaver from Plunkett Cooney. Mike, say hello to everybody out there in WJR land. One of the big things we got going on, Mike, is obviously we'll touch base on the Crumbly issue. Just you see that in Oakland County going on, Karen McDonald going at it on James Crumbly. And I know you had thoughts, maybe different than mine, but we'll talk about that. But how many, just to give a flavor, I mean, I've tried a lot of cases in my day and still continue to do so. How many cases do you think you've taken to a jury trial in your career? And how long has your career been?
So it's funny you say that. This Saturday was my 35th anniversary at Plunkett Cooney. So that's a long time to be in any one place. So the only job I had longer was my paper route for the Detroit News. So I've probably tried somewhere around 85 cases to a jury verdict. So it sounds like not many, but it's a lot.
Oh, yeah, especially in the civil world.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, I still love the battle. Mm-hmm. I love to win. I hate to lose. I like the intellectual challenge of, you know, going against great lawyers, skilled lawyers, and trying to beat them.
Yeah.
So I still enjoy it.
Well, we've had our fair share. You and I tag teaming on cases together, you know. Yeah, we've had I brought you in on your first murder trial out in Oakland County.
First and only murder trial.
Yeah. We did pretty good there.
That was good. Good result.
Right. But in the civil case compared to the criminal case, I always tell people they have to understand, criminal, you're dealing with liberty. In a civil bucket, you're dealing with money. And primarily, and I have brought you in, and we just did the EMU case. We're forbidden to get into the EMU case, obviously, but that result of representing 43 people was that was hard. But the civil arena for which you work in and dealing with, you deal with everything from defense of insurance companies, you name it, and recently getting into the plaintiff's work on certain cases that it's always, you know, fortunate to bring you into. What are you taking as the time has gone on over those 35 years, and what do you see the biggest changes in the civil world? Of, you know, we used to have a really deep bench. I don't know if we do anymore, but regardless, what do you see in the world of the civil litigation?
I'll tell you what is a source of great frustration to me is email. I might get 350 email a day, so it's a little frustrating and it's tough to keep up on it. If you're out of the office for the day, either in trial or in depositions, you come back and you have to get through those because your clients expect you to get back to them immediately. But I think what we've lost is a bit of the camaraderie that we used to have, and that started happening before COVID, but COVID made it worse. Mm. Every Monday, I'd be in Macomb County with motions, Wednesday in Oakland County, and then Fridays in Wayne County, and you'd see all the folks that you had cases with or against or co-defendants, and you could talk and talk to each other face-to-face and work out a lot of things. And we've really lost that. And, you know, I think that's a bit tragic for the youngest lawyers.
Right.
Because they never got to experience that. And now it's always a fight as opposed to, I know that person. I know that lawyer. I'd just like to talk to him or her and we'll get this resolved.
Yeah.
And that's gone away a bit.
It's funny you say that because Kim Worthy, she's going to come on. She's going to be a regular staple into the show. She unfortunately couldn't be here tonight, but one of the things we talk about is the younger lawyers not having sometimes the ability to learn from the institutional lawyers that knew and worked and have been through it a million different ways from Sunday. And it's even changed in offices where you have lawyers that don't, you know, want to work remotely and the like. And it's, I got to believe, a area of frustration because I had a sleeping bag in my office at the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office. I'd be nervous about a misdemeanor trial back in the day, right?
Yeah.
So, but with COVID and the like, you don't see that.
No, and in the old days, the young lawyers would stop by the office and say, hey, listen, I've got this issue. Can you help me work through it? And you'd do it. Well, they aren't calling me to ask me those things. And, doors always open. I'm there at least 5 days a week, usually six.
Right.
And I'm happy to talk to any of them. But And it's getting back. Some people are coming back, and it makes it better. I think it makes better lawyers when you have a chance to, you know, put two minds together and work through a problem.
Everybody, I only know two people that get in as early as Weaver does at Plunkett Cooney. Larry Shulman at Bodman, I think he rang the bell somewhere around 4:30 or 5 in the morning. And Mike Weaver, you come in at 8:30 and he would say to you, you're working banker hours today. So that's, you know, I think that's well known out there in the public. I might be getting a secret out there, but I think, you know, people that know your work ethic, you're in the office, you're usually the one that opens the door for everybody.
I'm there about 10 to 5 every day. I find that, you know, it works for me. It's quiet. There's no one around. If I happen to be a little angry with an email I got from another lawyer, I've calmed down by the time he or she has come to the office, right? So there's no nasty phone call or nasty email back. So it works for me. It's just something I've just done for so long that I'll never change it now.
Well, I love having you on the show. You're going to be here with me throughout, and we got some great guests. Weaver's an athlete, played baseball primarily, but at the end of the day, we got David Layton coming in to us today from up north in Genesee County, Flint. I call it my second home. And the night train lane, Dick, the night train lane, his son is going to be with us today. And then we also have a case that Mike and I are working on that has touched us from every angle you could possibly imagine. And I tell people, you know, we can have sympathy, but empathy is something we may not have. And that's because we don't know what those shoes feel like. We're going to have on Rose Bronstein tonight. And also we're going to check in with them on a regular basis. But Rose and Rob lost their son in a tragic death of suicide after being bullied, and that being, I'm not disseminating anything that's not already out there in the public eye. It's, the lawsuit's been filed, but from the cover-up of the bullying. But we want to talk about the strides they have made and what they have uncovered. So we'll be right back behind the bench.
Welcome back to Behind the Bench with Todd Flood, exploring the big legal cases in the news, both locally and around the country. Todd will also speak with judges, attorneys, and other special guests about our current legal system and how to navigate it. Now, once again, here's Todd Flood.
Well, the next guest we have coming on, I got to tell you something, of prosecutors, and this is one that's near and dear to my heart. He's one of the best in the state, if not the country. He actually is one that not everyone does this, but he's actually grinding daily, if covering courtrooms on a regular basis. He does it all. And I got to believe one thing that he is always in need of is staff and competent staff to come and help with clearly Flint Genesee County, the volume and the volume of cases. Prosecutor Layton, you with me?
Hi, Todd. How are you?
Good, my man. I got Mike Weaver here. He's one of those silk stocking lawyers from Plunkett Cooney. A real lawyer, though, I got to tell you. He actually goes to the courtrooms and tries cases. So, you know, you got Weaver here. How you
That's
doing?
Impressive. All is well. We're doing very well up here in Flint and Genesee County, and keeping busy, never a dull moment, always an exciting day down at the courthouse.
I got to believe. So let me ask you this, and I hate to put you on the spot, but I got a feeling your intake of cases you look at from the warrants section and also taking it all the way to trial has to be a huge number at times. What is that number, if you know, of how many cases you bring in a year?
Usually around 5,000 felony cases every year are brought in by the 30 or so police agencies in Genesee County. We have struggled greatly, especially since COVID, to keep up. Our staff is not where it needs to be, although some good things are happening, which I can talk about.
Yeah.
But we just most recently reduced our warrant queue from around 800 to around 500. And that's for drop-off warrants. You know, in custody warrants, obviously, my warrant division gets to those right away because under law you have to. But drop-off warrants, we were getting pretty close to 900 in the backlog. We've cut that to 500. And the way we've been able to do that, Todd, is I want to shout out to State Senator John Cherry, Speaker of the House Joe Tate, and, of course, the governor who signs the overall budget. We in Genesee County received a $3 million allocation just directly to the prosecutor's office.
Oh, wow.
Wayne got five. We got three. Saginaw, Kalamazoo, Ingham, and Muskegon each got one. It's because these legislators understand that prosecutors are really overworked and underpaid. And thanks to that allocation, I was able to beef up my staff, and we're still working on it. And getting folks to want to be prosecutors these days is not easy. It's another whole issue. But we've been able to beef up the staff and cut that warrant queue down from 800 to 500. So we're on the upswing. And, you know, I always look at my office like a baseball team, and I'm the president and general manager. I'm always looking for good players, plug them in where I think they can make plays and do good for the community. And right now we're on an upswing, and we're competing for the pennant.
Well, there you go. You know, I got to tell you, and Mike, you can appreciate this, David, the thing about a prosecutor, an assistant prosecutor, is it's not about getting wealthy. You're representing assistant prosecutors, assistant APAs are representing the public, this, you know, and taxpayer dollars. And it's a passion. It's not about cash. It's a passion to do the public service and to fight. And there's no better job, I think, period, than being able to ferret out the truth, find out what happened, put your case together, get the bad guy, and make sure there's consequences. And if you're in it for the money, you're in it for the wrong reason. It's about actually, I think, service. And you're blessed when you find those individuals that want to serve. I have a dear friend that works for you, obviously, I think the world of her. And that's Karen Hansen. I mean, there's no one that's going to try more cases than her in her lifetime. But how's, you know, do you have, and one thing we see in other counties is we don't see a good bench as far as like your back, your institutional knowledge, the older prosecutors teaching the younger prosecutors. We see this all the time in the police departments, younger cops teaching younger cops. What do we see in prosecutors' offices?
Yeah, you don't see that like you used to. You're absolutely right. We used to have that bench. We used to have those seniors who could sit first chair and the younger ones sit second chair. We still have some. I mean, obviously, I'm one of them. We were I was just talking to Andrea Legender, who runs my Circuit Court Felony Trial Division, and we were talking about the need to train on cross-examination. I had watched one of my young lawyers do a cross-examination. You know, he did okay, but when I talked to him, he had never heard of Professor Irving Younger, which I know older lawyers, we all know who that is.
The commandments, the 25 commandments. Yes, yes, or
exactly.
10, yeah.
So we have now decided we're going to have a little in-house training led by me and one other, and we're going to show a cross-examination that really went well. We're going to show how the lawyer applied Irving Younger's rules of cross-examination. Never ask a question you don't know the answer to. Don't let them explain. Feed them the answer, leading questions. You know, all the rules that are out there, but it boggled me that they don't know who that is. So we're going to double up, and we're going to do a cross-examination in-house training, and it'll go a long way. But one of the good things that is happening is some of my young lawyers are stepping up. They're now trying capital cases in circuit court. And last week, we had three young lawyers go 3 for 3. We won
God
a murder
bless America.
Trial, we won a sexual assault trial, and we won another murder trial. So we had a good week.
That's an awesome week. That's an awesome week. And the fact of the matter is you only learn, as Unger would say, is you had to have 25 jury trials before you could, you know, really know what the heck you were doing, right? So I totally respect that, and the fact that you're getting them in there. I remember in Wayne County, coming out of one trial, and Kershunas handed me a file that one of the prosecutors had called in sick, and the jury had already been picked, and we had to go down and try that case. So it's a matter of getting in there, right, and doing it, and having that experience. To me,
yeah, and Todd, on your other point about not getting rich as a prosecutor, that's absolutely true. And not why any of us choose public service. But what used to happen is you would forego a bigger paycheck because you knew you were going to get good health benefits. You knew that
right.
At the end of the line, there was going to be a nice defined benefit pension for you when you retired after 25 years or whatever.
Right.
But you know what? Those days are gone. Those days are gone. The health benefit is not what it used to be. There is no more defined benefit pension in most governmental entities for prosecutors any longer. So we didn't keep up with paying what we need to pay to attract young lawyers to want to do the job. And, you know, when I would go to my county board of commissioners, their answer was, well, you know, you don't need it. And then when I finally convinced them I do need it, they'd say, well, we don't have it. So I, after all these years, I got fed up, and I just turned to the state, and I want to, again, State Senator John Kerry, Speaker of the House Joe Tate, those guys came through.
Well, that's the way it should be. And, you know, an honest living for an honest pay job, right, that's should be expected for every single one of our public servants. Get me the retirement packages. That's what they say, you know, kills us, but it kills the job. If people coming in, but when you think about it, it's a no-brainer. Give me good police, give me good teachers, give me good prosecutors, pay them the right amount of money, and you know what you'll do? You'll increase your tax base, and you'll increase the values of your property, obviously, and the ability to pay people. One thing I got to tell you, know, I know this is taboo. I love you like a brother. You're seriously one of the best, but if we had, I say this now out loud, if we had Granholm, and the Flint water crisis, we would not have had the Flint water crisis. Just my 2 cents. I know people's phones probably, you know, the mics probably hit the floor, but I'm just letting you know that's mine. You were my boss, and I appreciate you more
well,
than you can imagine.
Well, we know you know a lot about that, my friend.
Yes, yes, I do.
You're a fine lawyer, and you did an excellent job.
Thank you, my friend. Be well.
Thanks for having me on.
You got it. David Layton. We'll be right back just after this.
Welcome back to Behind the Bench with Todd Flood, exploring the big legal cases in the news, both locally and around the country. Todd will also speak with judges, attorneys, and other special guests about our current legal system and how to navigate it. Now, once again, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. Well, I got to tell you, the next guest, and I will tell you, there's going to be more conversations with Mr. Walker over the future here on Behind the Bench. I can assure you of that. His life and life story is just so fascinating. But he just got back from Los Angeles, and he has three brothers or two brothers. There's three of them, and his father, the famous Dick Night Train Lane, a hero here in Detroit back, I think, 1960 to 65 or so. I think he was with Detroit as a defensive back. Welcome to the show, Behind the Bench. Mr. Walker, how are you?
I'm good.
There's a little bit of an echo. You just might have to turn off your radio if you have that on. But it's such a pleasure to have you with us. And I know your father, a hero to you and to many others. Tell us a little bit about your pops and what you've been going through. And what's happening in his life. And by the way, I have a friend with me tonight. I have Mike Weaver tonight, who is an encyclopedia for sports stuff. So,
how you doing, Mr. Walker?
Okay. Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Can you guys hear me okay?
We can hear you great.
All right. I turned the radio down a little bit. Well, I'm one of three sons of Night Train Lane. I'm the middle son. I'm Richard Andrew Walker. I have two more brothers, Richard Lane Jr. and Richard Latimer Lane. So we're all named after our dad. We all have three different moms, and two of us grew up here in the Detroit area. I grew up in Detroit. My younger brother grew up in Highland Park, and the oldest brother grew up in Los Angeles, California.
Mm.
So we've got Richard, and then father is Richard. So we've got four Richards to carry on the legacy.
So when you talking about your dad, and I know you just went and saw some footage of your father and what stories have been, I guess, the biography of your dad of how he made it. Tell us what's in your mind about what stands out the most after your trip.
Okay, well, we didn't just talk about my dad playing football. We wanted to go all the way back to the beginning, to when my dad was wrapped up in newspaper at 3 months old and thrown away as a baby.
Wow.
And being found by the lady who adopted him later, which was our grandmother, and he went from the garbage to one of the greatest players to ever play the game of football.
Wow.
So that's the story we're telling. I just come back from L.A. They flew us down. They rented a movie theater in Long Beach. We went and sat down for almost a couple of hours. They previewed the documentary with us, and this thing is coming out great. So this year will be our dad's 50th anniversary at the Hall of Fame. We're going to have this done before that. We want to be able to preview it. We'd like to preview it here at home, hopefully do something with the Lions where they can view it also with the team, and also down in Canton, Ohio with the Hall of Famers.
Isn't that something? And so I came I'm actually Mike Weaver's firm, Plunkett Cooney. We're working through some of the things for your father's rights and for his offsprings. And mm-hmm. making connections for you to have that happen. One of the things that I mean, it's chilling, Mike, isn't it chilling to hear that one of the heroes of our time, you want to think about fight for a moment?
To suggest this was a humble beginning is an understatement, obviously. And, you know, then he wasn't drafted out of college, and yet he played, 14 years, Richard, in the NFL?
From 1952 to 1965.
Wow. And
The thing, you know, being wrapped up in papers, this baby was, I mean, he was a fighter from the womb, man. He was a fighter from day one, you know?
Day one, there it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Never gave up, and now he's one of the top greatest 100 players of all times.
How much film footage have you seen of your dad playing?
I've seen as a kid, not just as a kid, but as a... In my early 20s, my dad had an apartment down in Atlanta, and he had a lot of the old films there, you know, where he stayed at with him and his girlfriend. So I used to watch a lot of those films that actually had no sound to them.
Oh, wow.
And just to watch them and not have no sound effects, you would sit there and cringe when you saw him hit somebody. You would make the sound effects because you knew it was a heck of a hit.
Yeah, right, right.
So, Richard, how do you get the moniker Night Train?
You know, that went back to years ago. He used to go over to one of the rooms to visit, and I believe it was the Buddy Morrow. The song was always playing Night Train, and he knocked on the door, and he said, "Come on in, Night Train." But my father often thought that they were being a little racist with him because they were calling him Night Train. He didn't realize that that's not what they were doing. Until one day they had a game that they played, and Night Train ended up putting a heck of a hit on Charlie Choo Choo. So that newspaper article wrote, Night Train derails Charlie Choo Choo. And from then on, he kind of loved that name.
And that's something.
That's awesome.
So when you obviously saw the documentary, and I'm sure it's coming together in parts and the like. You know, there had to be, you tell us, but there had to be moments with tears. There had to be moments of laughter. There had to be moments of, you know, just kind of silence and then, you know, applause. I mean, kind of give us the pulse of how you felt when you walked out of that. Did you feel all those different types of emotions when you came out of that?
And our director Eric, and the guys from Elevate, who are directing and sponsoring this, man, they really put this together. They were able to put some music to this from like in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. They made this thing connect with the music, the theme. They even put some cartoon to it, and I don't want to spill too much of the beans, but this thing really, really came together. I mean, it had its moments where it had you laughing, and it had sad moments, and then there was a moment where I talked about my dad and a certain situation that I had that ends up being a very, very sad situation with his last wife, Dinah Washington. But you guys are going to have to watch this documentary. I don't want to spill the beans on too much, but
I promise you we will.
And laughter.
I promise you we will, and it would be an insane privilege to watch it with you someday. I mean, fact of the matter is that God gave me the heart and the brain, but didn't give me the DNA to play the game. But I love, and you know, I've been a season ticket holder. I love football. It's but for that, I doubt I'd be the attorney I am at times, just because, you know, I mean, you got the two-a-days, you got the practice, you know, it's everything. So teaches
you know
not to quit.
They changed the game.
Yeah, they got bigger helmets, obviously.
No, they didn't get better helmets. My dad, you know, after they kept changing the game, he told him there wasn't a good a tackle below the eyebrow. So, you know, he was always a headhunter. So they banned the face mask. They banned the clothesline. And then what else was it? The horse collar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, guys don't realize it. The younger guys, they don't realize if they'd been playing back then, a lot of those guys would be out for injuries. You know,
yeah,
it's a whole different game. It's a whole different game now.
It is. It is. But you know what's? I don't know. There's something in the water You look at we just saw Lomas. Got to love Lomas. But, Mike, would you want to be hit? I mean, look at that guy, Lomas. I mean, shoot.
That guy's half of what he was weight-wise when he played. I wouldn't mess with Lomas.
No. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the size of these guys is just, you know, every year it seems they get bigger and faster. I got to ask you, so you are now currently working through all of this. The next step is making sure that the family's protected with your dad's rights. When do you expect this to air after that's all done? When do you think this will come out?
Well, this year, like I said, is its 50th anniversary for the NFL Hall of Fame. So we want to be able to have that ready to go before then. We've been checking around places to preview this. Our ultimate goal is...
Did I just lose him? Yeah. Well, we'll have to bring him back at some other time. I don't know what just happened there, but...
Can't wait for that movie to come out.
No, I can't wait either.
This guy's a legend.
Yeah.
He's a legend. But I didn't realize that.
I'm still here.
Yeah, now we can hear you.
Yeah. Somehow. Yeah, I'm still here.
So. All right.
Well, we lost you on the board, but... So you're anticipating, Mr. Walker, this to come out? This year for his 50th.
This year, that's the ultimate goal. 50-year anniversary, celebrating the 50 year, bringing the documentary out. Last year we were invited down to L.A. They brung us out on the field at halftime. They announced my dad's 70th anniversary of him still holding the record, of no one breaking his interception record.
Well, my man, my heart out to you and your family, and I'm so glad it's coming. We'll be in touch. Thank you so much, Mr. Walker.
Congratulations, Richard.
Definitely a pleasure. Thank you.
Nice meeting you guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
We'll be right back with Behind the Bench just after this.
Welcome back to Behind the Bench with Todd Flood. Exploring the big legal cases in the news, both locally and around the country. Todd will also speak with judges, attorneys, and other special guests about our current legal system and how to navigate it. Now, once again, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. Weaver and I commanding the queue today. Got to also thank Parker and Marv for helping us behind the scenes over there. I do have to give a shout out to... we won. I got my verdict back today. Sad case. It's been all over the national news. Deanne Warner, it's a missing body case. Her husband's been charged with homicide. I'm going to be suing. I had to first establish that she was dead, and we just got that order back today. It was an excruciating trial, but now we move on. I may have to call you in that, Weaver. I got you going. But
love the probate court.
Yeah. Well, now it's...
Now you'll be over in
the circuit. Yeah. Well, the next guest that comes to us obviously fills our heart with, you know, her drive and her passion to do what's right and to get done something that obviously is broken in our system. Rose and Rob Bronstein, we got Rose with us tonight, and Mike... you and I have talked about this case a gazillion times. We have insanely amazing co-counsel in Chicago. Danielle, phenomenal.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, beyond belief. But Rose lost her son to suicide after he was bullied in a way that should never happen at all. With the onslaught of social media that hits us and cyberbullying and it being covered up. That lawsuit's right now in Cook County, and we're fighting the battles there. Danielle leading the stern. But Rose, thanks for coming on. And I know this is a topic that's difficult, but you have championed some amazing things, and that's why we wanted to have you on, and that's why we wanted to touch base with you and Rob on a regular basis, just to get the word out there about all the amazing things you and your family are doing to bring this to the forefront.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit, Rose, of, you know, the buckets over bullying and, you know, the how big of an issue you find, you have found about cyberbullying in the past, all the time you've been working on it.
Well, to start, cyberbullying is the second largest discipline issue in schools today. With schools allowing cell phones in the school, in the classroom, all day long, all the time, students have unfettered access to social media, which is unmonitored, unregulated, and that just adds to this epidemic of cyberbullying, where to the point that it's become so dangerous, it is leading to deadly consequences. And there are so many stakeholders in this problem that need to step up and address it and be proactive to make the change so that this stops. But I'm finding that it's not easy. You've got parents of bullies who deny, deflect, don't ever even consider that their child could potentially be harming another child to the point that it's so abusive that the victim wants to take their own life. You've got school administrators, teachers, faculty, and staff who are not trained in how to handle bullying and cyberbullying. And if they are trained, I know for a fact they don't get more than 2 hours a year of training.
Wow.
And when they are brought an incident of bullying or cyberbullying, they are being told to manage it as a peer-to-peer conflict.
We know that. So, we know that from this case.
Yeah.
Right.
Rose, is the problem a lack of policies, or is it a lack of enforcing the policies at the school level?
Both. And I think it depends on the school and on the state. So, for example, in Chicago and in our case, where my son went to school at the Latin School of Chicago, they did and do have a zero tolerance bullying and cyberbullying policy in place. However, they willfully choose not to follow it. And then you've got at the state level, we have a Illinois state bullying policy, which also asserts in there that all schools should have a bullying policy in place and clearly outlines what bullying looks like and what cyberbullying looks like and clearly outlines how damaging either of those two abuses are to children, how they harm children mentally, physically, and the kinds of impact it has on them. But the problem is, as well, is that the Illinois State Board of Education does not enforce this law.
You've been working hard, haven't you, with the Attorney General in Illinois and other political figures. Have they been receptive?
Our Illinois Attorney General has been wonderful and extremely receptive. He's a big proponent of social media reform. He is a big proponent of child safety. We have some legislators in Illinois that claim to be proponents of child safety and social media reform, but politics are politics, and they will only move so far to a certain degree, and it's either because big tech is in their pockets,
right,
or they have other political agendas that are more important to them outside of child safety.
You can't turn the news on or turn a page in the paper without, you know, on a daily basis, for surely on a weekly basis, without seeing something with either AI, the cyberbullying, the bullying that takes place in this social media platforms. I got to believe, and I'm curious what you've found, because you've been working with families across the country. I got to believe the cyberbullying is more, has a more deleterious effect, has a worse effect on kids than it would be if they were physically present. Mentally, it just seems to me, because everybody looks at, you know, Facebook or whatever, you know?
Well, absolutely. So if you are a child, 12, 13, 14, and you are being attacked, harassed, humiliated, invited to die by suicide, threatened for your life on social media and in front of a very large number of people, and you can't get it stopped, the amount of PTSD, it causes PTSD,
for
anxiety,
sure.
Depression, right? So imagine having to go to school every single day and walk right back into it as it keeps circulating. What it does is it affects the mental health of the child being abused. And what I don't think parents, school administrators, legislators, and all the adults in the room understand is why does society expect a child to have to be resilient enough to just deal with it and to have to go back into that environment every single day when that's not expected of as an adult in the workplace, correct?
That's right.
So if an adult goes to work every single day and they're being harassed, humiliated, invited to take their life by suicide, all these different types of egregious behaviors, that's criminal, right?
Yeah.
The perpetrator would be fired.
Rose, we gotta have you back. We're gonna have you back once a month. We love you and we think the world of you. Keep up the great work.
Way to go, Rose.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks. We'll be back behind the bench after this.